So let's talk about how sometimes on interpretive signage in national parks, there are characters that have been created specifically to help teach or help a learning experience, maybe for younger people, to create a way to like engage for like an extended period of time. Like the character might appear on multiple signs, mm-hmm. the character might appear on brochures, mm-hmm. the character might appear. Obviously, you work in education.
For now.
I worked for a long time in education. Let's talk about when that works really well and sometimes when it doesn't.
Yeah, well, I mean, I get it. I think from the perspective of how I'm taking my child, not mine, because I don't want children or do I have them, to a learning experience that can feel kind of dry, let's use a cartoon character to hook them. I just feel like it's Mr. DNA from Jurassic Park.
A little
Park.
Bit, or Clippy.
Dino DNA, or Clippy, the anthropomorphized things, essentially. I guess a talking animal would be considered to be anthropomorphized. No, I think it's maybe only non-living objects or can be anthropomorphized.
Oh, because so I don't, they have some amount of life already, but they're just not. Like, are you saying like taking an animal and personifying it?
Right. I think that would just be personifying as opposed to anthropomorphizing.
Now we're
getting into a language debate. So I do think it's interesting when we have that. I feel like that has to be something that's fairly recent, like within the last several decades, like from the 90s,
probably.
80s, 90s.
Probably.
Like, I don't think that was the thing that was happening beforehand, where it was like, I mean, I guess you have animals like Smokey the Bear, who was probably from the 70s, and you also have the owl, whose name I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Give a hoot, don't pollute. Pollutie, yep. The owl. So, like, right. I guess that is, it becomes this sort of like teachable moment, and using cartoon characters as that kind of gateway. I could see how it's helpful in a situation like
sure.
that. To
sure.
like, again, it's to bring things down to the level of the child. And to also like engage them and meet them where they're at.
Sure, I get that. I totally get that. I always like it when I tend to like it more when you can definitely tell, like, okay, I'm using a device, but I'm actually like I'm going really far with the device. Because, for instance, like Smokey the Bear exists to have one message.
Right.
In any context Smokey the Bear is in, Smokey the Bear is gonna have the same message, right?
Right.
Like, only you can help prevent wildfires, things like that, right? He's the same with the little owl and the littering and the polluting.
Whatever
and the whatnot,
their name is.
Right. But I really appreciate it when you can tell that it's not just one layer, you know?
Like, yeah.
While Smokey the Bear is iconic, the point of Smokey the Bear was, hey, we need to not only educate young people, but just educate people in general about wildfires. We can do that through something that is a little more accessible.
Well, I think
like,
it also allows you
like
to coalesce an idea or a movement into a thing. It's like it's like mascotism, right?
Yeah, it's totally kind of that.
Yeah.
But what I really like is when we get to really follow a journey, like a character goes on a journey, and in that journey, it's like a lot of learning experience,
sure.
right? That I really appreciate. In that instance, you can tell that the creators went beyond the conversation of let's make it fun and have a character, but it's like, okay, yes, let's make it fun and have a character, but let's make the character intentional and purposeful and give it like multiple things to do rather than just one thing to do.
Sure.
You know, those are the ones that I respond to the most, mm-hmm. because I'm like, okay, I can actually follow you because you exist beyond just a single message. You exist to go on a journey so that I can learn something about this journey.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for adventure, I want to follow on the trail, or get a little lost and let the wind fill my sails. Get up when the stars still fill the sky, don't wake the sun. There's so much to be done, and the day has just begun. Go where the postcards are real, you can feel, you can open your eyes and open your heart when you gaze at the national park.
Father, you will follow you there.
At the national park.
Father, you will follow you there.
At the national park.
Father, you will follow you there.
Follow you, I'll I'll follow you there.
We would like to acknowledge that while visiting and hiking the land, also known as White Sands National Park, that we are on the traditional and stolen land of the Lipan Apache, the Mescalero Apache, and the Tempecho people.
Okay, so we're taking it way back on this episode to our trip to White Sands National Park. And by way back, we mean 2 years ago when we were in this park in 2024, because this episode is coming out in 2026.
That's right.
This was part of a larger trip that included Guadalupe Mountains National Park, Carlsbad Cavern National Park, then White Sands, and then we went to Saguaro National Park.
Which, stay tuned, because you'll be hearing some episodes about Saguaro next.
That's right. That's yes, right.
We are in our desert park era.
And that's right. And if you listened to
our trail map
at the beginning of the season, we did say that anything could change.
Right.
And if you hear what we announced there versus what we
just said,
you will notice that things in fact changed. So we were fortunate to take this trip with our good friend of the pod, Becky Lomax, who's also an author, and did the first three parks with Becky and then split off after this final leg here in White Sands National Park. So essentially we just did Saguaro on our own.
Yep. We did have an airport rendezvous back in El Paso, though. So this was really like a little brief interlude, which that word will come up again today. In order to understand our journey to White Sands, we had started in Carlsbad, New Mexico, where we stayed and where we had been using as a home base to go to both Guadalupe Mountains National Park for 2 days and Carlsbad Caverns National Park for a day. And that happened in between our 2 days at Guadalupe Mountains. So because we were going to do White Sands in a day, and this is incredibly doable, you can do it in a half day.
Yeah.
It is a small park.
It's a pass-through park, sure.
Unless you're planning on staying the night to stargaze, truly it is, you can do it in a half day. But because we were staying in Carlsbad, and we were only doing this in a half day, and then immediately driving to Arizona from New Mexico to Saguaro,
Tucson specifically,
we needed to hit the road pretty early. So we wanted to be able to do everything that you could do in White Sands, which we did. And we didn't want to have to deal with the heat because this is a desert sand park. And so that has a lot of implications with it when it comes to the heat. Kind of no matter the time of the year, it just something to kind of be cognizant of.
So leaving from the Carlsbad, New Mexico area, this was going to be a 3-hour drive that was going to involve a lot of elevation because it meant we were going to have to climb through the Lincoln National Forest. This route also took us just south of the Mescalero Reservation. Becky was the one who was driving on this day, and I was up front and for most of this part of the drive. And did I fall asleep in the front seat? Was that what was going on?
Great. I'm pretty sure.
I somehow slept in a car, which is odd.
You were
tired.
I don't
usually do that. I was tired. Yes, you had exhausted me.
Yeah, usually do.
But the drive was about 3 hours, and to ensure that we would get to White Sands by 9 a.m. with time to stop for the restroom, we did leave around 5 or 5:30. Because sometimes hiking early and hiking often means driving early and driving often.
It's true.
So this is the typical park time for us, especially since you get up early.
And Becky kind of doesn't sleep.
She also has similar sleep patterns to you.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
you suffer.
So yes, but I've accepted the fact that we
always suffer.
But I always suffer.
This is a beautiful drive. So for the bulk of it, we are on Highway 82, which is sleepy once we head west. But eventually, the closer we get to Lincoln National Forest, the more picturesque the scenery becomes. As we climb in elevation, as we get into the National Forest, we can tell that this is a big recreational area. There are some small souvenir type stores along the way and lodging as well. And there are homes and cabins that we also get to into some snowy areas within the National Forest. Having not seen much snow that year in New Jersey, this was a welcome sight. And for Becky on a typical year in Montana, this is a typical sight seeing snow. One of the things that Becky did talk about on the drive was the city of Cloudcroft, as this is essentially at the peak of the National Forest on 82. Cloudcroft sits at about 8,600 feet of elevation. And the cool thing about Cloudcroft, other than the elevation, which we'll talk about a little bit more in a bit, is that it's also featured in the book Aristotle and Dante Explore the Waters of the World, which, hi, if you want a lovely, lovely book, please read this. But do read Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe first, because, oof, talk about tearing out your heartstrings.
So Cloudcroft is so high up that you can actually see the city of Alamogordo below, which is a wild perspective. And I'm pretty sure you all woke me up to see this, which was really cool.
Yeah.
So we were going to drop over 4,000 feet of elevation to head down through the National Forest. And then from there, White Sands is really close.
Yeah, it's not too far. We make the descent through more picturesque forest. We are still seeing glimpses of the city below as we're driving. And I was definitely glad, even though elevation doesn't usually bother me, that Becky was driving. She has driven this route before. So it was nice for us to be passengers, to be able to sort of see things and not have to be paying attention to the road, especially with the way that we were driving so high up.
And once we get to Alamogordo, it really didn't take us much longer to get to White Sands National Park. It really is sort of like just right off the road.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So we literally pull right off the highway onto the park entrance road. And then,
which is called Dunes Drive.
Correct. And then we pulled into the visitor center.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so one thing you definitely have to check prior to going to White Sands, and one of our concerns was that Dunes Drive can sometimes be closed because of missile testing from the nearby Holloman Air Force Base. This was something that Becky was like, we have to check on this because sometimes it can mean delays up to like 3 hours because of the missile testing that's happening, because they don't want anybody to be in danger. Not that it's something that's ever happened, but it's just an extra precaution that they take. You can call the park ahead of time to know what the testing schedule may be, but it can definitely prevent travel into the park. So it's just something to think about if you're planning on heading to White Sands. Definitely do call ahead to check on that.
So luckily the road was open. We first pull over and have our visitor center moment. Mm-hmm. This is a geographically very appropriate visitor center. It is a very Southwest style inspired building with like exposed inner beams, adobe walls. And it had quite a bit of interpretive stuff inside. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not the biggest visitor center, but
no, it's rather small.
It was certainly very specific to this place. And again, the visitor center serving as like a contextual learning experience for you to then go into a park to then see what's going on in a park. I did think it did its job very well.
Something to think about, the parking lot is pretty small here.
We were pulled off onto the side because the parking lot was full. So people had already started inventing parking spots around like the road that goes in.
Mm-hmm.
And that was at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always think that, oh, this national park is so small, it's not going to be very full. That's never the case.
Lies.
Lies. Every time. That's never the case. Any national park always has people in it.
Yeah.
And always has plenty of people in
it.
So White Sands included, definitely check to see if, you know, things are open before going. But we did have a great time in this visitor center, which we were able to, it only took 5 or 10 minutes to go through the
get our patches.
Little interpretive stuff, get our patches, see what was there. They had a lot about the stargazing. They had a lot about the animals that were there. Mm-hmm. And they had a lot about the gypsum sand that is specific and found only here.
Well,
I mean, in this
in
kind
this
of
part of the world,
in
yes.
this part of the world, it, in this amount of it.
Right. There are very few gypsum sand fields, and this is one of them. Yeah.
And so that is what makes White Sands National Park special, and that is what part of why it got elevated to National Park status from National Monument status. So there is some really cool science involved here that you're not really going to find anywhere else, at least nearby.
Yeah.
And that visitor center does a great job of like letting you know what's going on.
Yeah. And I feel like for the last of our sand parks, White Sands, Great Sand Dunes, and Indiana Dunes, I feel like this one is very different. And we'll get into that a little bit more as we move on. So we take a moment here to stop and top off our water, pack some additional snacks, and we get back in the car. And we start our way down Dunes Drive through the entrance station.
And with that, let's take our first break. y'all. It's Dusty and Mike with exciting news.
That's right. It's our episode finder. It's all about making finding our episodes even easier.
Want to find more episodes about hikes in Shenandoah? With over 10 episodes across two separate seasons, it would have involved a lot of scrolling and searching.
Now, with our episode finder, you can find all those episodes with a few easy clicks. That way, finding an episode on Yosemite from season one is just as easy as finding an episode on Zion, Yellowstone, and Haleakala, all in separate seasons.
With over 275 episodes in 35 different national parks, our episode finder will add ease when finding out more about hikes in these spaces.
But it's not just about hikes by national park. We've categorized our entire library so you can find hikes by state, hikes by terrain, and hikes by difficulty.
And all of our Trail Mix episodes are there too, so you can easily find our science-based episodes, interviews, and more.
Planning a trip to Colorado and want to hear more about our adventures there? Want to grunt it out on some really tricky trails or learn more about glaciers, grasslands, and mountains?
Just click the link in our show notes or on our Instagram bio, and it pops right up. You can also head directly to our website and look for the episode finder at the top of the navigation bar.
Conquer one hike in one national park, one park at a time, with just a few clicks with our episode finder. Happy trails!
Okay, everyone, we're playing Walk Run.
Which we haven't played actually in a long time. I know mm-hmm. that's our running gag.
But I know. It's our tired phrase that we say all the time, but it's true. We haven't. How does this game work?
So the game works in one of two ways. You can give someone an item, a person, a thing that walked. So something else in the future, an invention or the start of that thing or the introduction of that person could run, so they could take off and take flight. Or you can do it in reverse, where it's like, this person ran, so who walked so they could actually, or that thing ran, so what walked so that thing could actually take off and do its thing.
Yeah. Okay, great.
So I've got one for you.
I'm ready.
So what walked so Labubus could run?
It was Furbies. Furbies walked so that Labubus could. Yes, because they were weird and ugly and strange. And I mean, they're kind of almost the same shape. I would say it was either, I mean, my instinct was Furbies. You could maybe say Ugly Dolls, which had a minute.
Also, not what I was thinking, but like, so fascinating.
Had a minute. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I know there were other things. To me, a Labubu is less about the fact that it attaches to a bag mm-hmm. and more about the shape. And like, it's this adorable thing that I love that's foul looking. You know what I mean?
Stop talking about yourself like that.
So, yeah, Furbies or ugly dog dolls. Ugly dogs. Ugly dolls.
I was going to say Beanie Babies. Labubus are sort of a collectible thing too. I can see how you would say that. So if we're gonna say Furbies walked so Labubus could run, what walked so Furbies could run?
Tickle Me Elmo.
Oh wow, I love the lineage we're creating
this
here.
I'm so serious. I mean, like, and I think I'm associating it because I think it revived the idea of like toy of the year. I mean, there had been plenty of toys of the year that was a thing, but like it was during a time in the 90s when toy prices were, I mean, not that, you know, that it's not the same now.
Podcast about toy prices.
I know, apparently, but it was like, I remember my mom that year specifically did all of her holiday shopping in the summer and she had bought all these gifts for my cousins who are now adults and are the parents of my nieces and nephews. And she had purchased a Tickle Me Elmo for my cousin Joe. And the thing was only, you know, $10 at the time. But then by the time the holidays rolled around, they were selling it for $85.
Yeah.
In the 90s. Like, which is...
that tickles!
That, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's... Because then Furby Nightmare was like, fuel. We're going to be the toy of the year and be a cute, cuddly, weird thing that makes sounds.
But Labubus don't make sound, but I understand your lineage there.
There's right. my lineage.
So what do you got for me?
Okay, so I want to know, Tamagotchis walked so that what could run?
That's a great question. What could run because of Tamagotchis? I feel like I feel like it became like handheld video game consoles. Now, Game Boy was already a thing at the time, but at that point, things then exploded. Mm. I think it became like that was like the market for care for something. God, Tamagotchis. I wish that I had had one. I didn't even have a Digipet.
No. You didn't have a Tamagotchi.
I did not. I really wanted one really badly.
We could make that happen for you.
No, that's okay. I don't need that anymore. But yeah, I'm like, I think it might be more handheld video game consoles. Mm. Because even, and I hesitate to say like a handheld PlayStation or a Nintendo Switch or Game Boy even, I'm thinking about the one-off game consoles. Do you remember that? You could buy like a video game that mm-hmm. was like plastic with a screen and you could actually just play one game on it. It was like the single game console thing. Okay. And I feel like those ran because of that. Because Tamagotchi, you were only doing a few things. You were feeding it and cleaning up its poop. You had three or four buttons at the bottom.
Yeah.
And so I think they developed that technology into something that was a little bit more engaging, where it was like, oh, you actually can like play more of a game here.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you have a different answer?
Parenting.
It was the flower babies of
right.
I think actually flower babies walked.
Flower babies.
So that no, I think flower babies walked so Tamagotchis could run.
Oh, probably so. I don't actually that's not my answer. Okay. Here's an interesting thing. I think that go with me here. I think Tamagotchis walked so that Animal Farm could run. Like that game where you're like tending to a farm and building a whole thing. And like, I think it's the care thing that I'm connecting.
Okay. Okay. Yeah,
I mean, that
kind of feels like it also falls in with the timeline of, I guess, like The Sims and Roller Coaster Tycoon and those types of games.
Mm-hmm.
I would say were all of that same era of Tamagotchi. So, because Animal Farm then became... What was that, up. Like early 2000s, like 2010s?
Animal Farm, I only heard about it like height of pandemic. So,
because we had to care for something, couldn't
I
care
guess,
for ourselves.
So we had to care for our animal farms. And that is walk, run, everyone.
Okay, so let's just clear the air here again. White Sands is tiny.
It is
teeny,
a
teeny,
small
tiny.
Park. Okay, you say tiny. It's not like Congaree tiny. Congaree is tiny. It's bigger than that.
But it's still on the small end of the national park scale of things.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
I mean, as far as land goes, it's big. Like, there is a decent chunk of land that makes up the park. The things to do one can do and have experiences in and do like trails, I say in quotation marks, very small.
Please read me harder though.
I will.
Thank you. As far as size goes, when it comes to parks, I would probably compare it to the Petrified Forest and Painted Desert.
Sure. Yeah.
Like it's that kind of thing.
It's not.
It's like a one drive
through. It's not Gateway Arch. That's for sure.
It's not Gateway Arch. No, no. That is a human-made structure that is a monument. But anyway, but also White Sands is small. This is not like a multi-day situation. This isn't even a one-day situation.
No.
So there are three small trails that one can do within the park and one larger trail. And we will cover the larger trail in the second episode because we did all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did everything.
One can, of course, camp and stargaze. And it is a dark sky area, right?
Pretty sure.
I think so. And so the stargazing is amazing. But as we said before, it's doable in a day, accessible, and easy to do passing through.
Yeah. The first two trails we're going to talk about are the Playa Trail and the Interlude Boardwalk. Now, as far as driving down Dunes Drive goes, this is not the order that you would actually go in. Interlude Boardwalk would actually be third after the Dunes Nature Trail. But these two trails are the smallest two within the park, so... And they're both on the right side of the road, so we're going to talk about them first. Pulling up, we find a spot on the side of the road for the Playa Trail, which is just a pull-off. There's no parking lot here.
That's right. And so the actual distance of the Playa Trail is a half mile. So I
round
hope,
trip.
Round trip. I hope you're getting a sense of just how small this area is. Mm-hmm. So Something to remember about these first three small trails is that, again, they're relatively short, but they are completely exposed.
Yep.
Full sunlight. There are no trees. You're not... None of this is happening. So shorter trails are a really good way to just get like a quick burst of what's happening and then back into the car to cool off.
Yeah, yeah. It was also very warm already at this point in the morning at 10 a.m. So short was where it was at. It was also April and it was very warm. So all that to say, we did not bring our packs with us on this half mile round trip trail. We did have a water bottle with us, but that's about it. The Playa Trail is short and it jaunts out to this desert oasis. There's a lot of good interpretive signage here that explains that white sand sits in a basin and that the water from the surrounding mountains actually collects here. Water can just be literally a few feet below the ground here. And when we walk out into this basin, we're able to walk around on it. And having done it now, it kind of feels like Badwater Basin a little bit, like looking back on it. This is also, we get kind of white, puffy, like gypsum here because of the intercedent water and the water that's just below the surface. Another sign that we see talks about the life cycle of the playa and how this area teems with life when water returns to it. So this is actually a wet area. We do have toads and brine shrimp and tadpoles that all return from underground hibernation and areas that are closer to the water table. So they hibernate down below the surface where the water is more active. And then when it's actually surface water, it becomes like a teeming kind of pond, I would say, of life.
So I remember walking and seeing some areas that felt like wetter sand.
Yeah, it was like, it was interesting to see these like areas that just looked like the sand was damper than other areas. And almost like holes in the ground. I don't know if something was digging or what, just for water. It's possible. But yeah, this is, again, a small area that you can get out to very simply.
The other thing about gypsum sand is that it's water soluble, which is unlike any other sand. So when it does get wet, unlike the sand at the beach where like the water pulls out and then it's not really retaining any water, gypsum sand is soluble in water because it's technically crystals.
Like a lot of the current parks, hundreds of thousands of years ago, this land was much lusher and wetter. So signage here also talks about the footprints that have been left behind by prehistoric animals and how they're preserved within the playa. After we explore a little, we end up making our way back to the car and we head down the road. We did stop at the Dune Life Nature Trail next, but we're going to stay on the right side of the road and talk about Interlude Boardwalk Trail. And if I were you, I think doing the trails in the order that we're presenting them in this episode actually makes a little bit more sense because it's like a buildup to the largest trail in the park, which we'll talk about in the next episode.
So this trail had an actual like proper parking lot, which was just off of Dunes Drive. It was pretty full and also full of people with dogs.
Yeah, a lot of dogs.
This park seems like one giant car on a hot day. So it is comforting that people are taking care of their dogs. But damn, this seems like a baffling park to take them to because it's just like, it's so... It's just, it very quickly can get so hot.
Yes, yeah.
But yes, it did spawn some of our favorite...
parody work.
Dog parody work, that's true.
Dog parade, smushy faces on display, dog parade. I forget the rest of the lyrics.
I forget what we said, but we ended with barking.
We did end
woof,
up with
woof,
barking.
Right.
Woof, woof, indeed. So we continue on past the floofs, our little floofy dog friends, onto a metal boardwalk, which makes this the most accessible trail within the park. You could do Playa Trail, I guess, depending on your availability and what your comfort level is, but this is a truly accessible trail. It's great considering there really isn't a lot to see in the park with full accessibility. And while you can certainly drive around the park, it's not like driving through arches and being like, I'm staying in the car, but oh my God, look, there's that arch over there. It's not that kind of park. So it is nice that this trail is here, at least, because it allows you the opportunity to see some of the expanse of the park.
So the white gypsum dune field that we are in are rarities in the world. So this Interlude Boardwalk Trail was going to take us out to a viewing platform, which also allows us to see it from a curated perspective. And this is only 0.4 miles. So again, short.
Less than the Playa Trail, that's for sure.
That's right. So we walk out to the boardwalk, and when we get to the covered viewing area, gives us an amazing view of the Sacramento Mountains through the dunes, because the dunes are surrounded by mountains mm-hmm. here. And so plenty of desert life here along the boardwalk in this viewing area. Right here in this viewing area, it's got lots of signage, including signs that talk about the geological timeline of the area, the benefits of yuccas, the lizards, the moths, the flora and the fauna, protection across national borders. Again, it looks like a sand field, but there's a whole lot more going on here than seems to be on the surface.
After examining the signage and the surroundings and taking in the sights of yet more dogs, we do make our way back down to the car. And with that, let's take our second break. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage
a drag king for the day.
Adam Together.
Adam Together.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Adam Together. I think Adam Together is a math nerd matchmaking drag king.
Okay. Well, I already know what he sings.
What does he sing?
Bippity boppity boo. Put them together and what do you got? Bippity boppity boo.
Oh, I kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And maybe it's like, I don't know, bibbidi bobbidi boo. Maybe there's a parody phrase he says instead of that in the song. I'm into this.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he's a matchmaking math queen, king, mm-hmm. king queen. So is it like a match game show when you go to a show?
It might be.
Yeah.
You might get matched with somebody and go on a date live.
Maybe it's like a speed dating experience and they're the MC.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm into that.
And I mean, we are recording this on Valentine's Day.
Oh, we are.
What a better day for you and I to find love.
That's right. That's right. We just graced each other's fingers.
We graced. Like, we graced like each the, other's fingers. We did.
like the painting in the Sistine Chapel
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
we just saw recently.
We did.
Okay, Adam Together. Okay, great. So it's a dating matchmaking show.
Mm-hmm.
Where the participants get to get matched together with dates.
Yeah, I think the merch is given to you. I mean, there's a lot of ways that we can do this. I'm thinking of the matching game that they talk about on Schitt's Creek with the locks and the keys.
Yes.
So I feel like you go into the event and this is like the icebreaker moment.
Singles week.
And it's like, great, here's your merches. You get a key, you get a lock. And then like you have to find out who it belongs to. And even if it's not a love match, you spend the first part of this speed dating match game style event chatting with somebody that you're meeting for the first time to break the ice with them.
I like that.
And then from there, it goes into just fun, campy dating.
Hosted by Adam Together.
And bippity boppity boo, indeed.
Ta-da.
Ta-door.
So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the love stage.
Adam Together.
So you don't think Adam Together lip syncs to Yakety Yak?
I do not.
No?
That's a dead joke in my mind.
That's your favorite song, though.
It is not.
It is. Don't mm-hmm. talk back.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to finish cleaning up your room.
Thanks, Mom. Thanks, mm-hmm. Mom. All right, so back to White Sands. So the last of our small hikes on this day was the Dune Life Nature Trail, or at least the last that we're presenting right now. This trail is a 1 mile loop, so the longest trail that we will do in this first episode. And so it's actually situated between the Playa Trail and the Interlude Boardwalk Trail. We would recommend leaving this for last, though, just because it feels like a nice build-up to then do the Alkali Flats Trail, which is what we're going to talk about in our second episode on White Sands.
So when we arrive at the Dune Life Nature Trail, we park in a lot that's got plenty of cars in it, similar to the Interlude Boardwalk. We gear up, put our packs on for this hike. And we knew this would be a little bit longer. Again, it's only a 1 mile loop, so it's not like it's like the longest loop in the world, but it's going to be longer than the things we did before. And did we wear our boots?
Yeah, we had our boots on.
We had our mm-hmm. boots on.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Because sometimes, occasionally, we will wear sneaks. But I think...
Oh, no.
Did we have
I had my
on?
Boots on, but you had those, I think you wore those wacky shoes. Like you wore like sand shoes.
What wacky shoes? I had those in Indiana Dunes.
Oh, that's what I'm remembering. And you hated
okay.
them.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
No, you had your boots on, but you had to take your boots off a few times to get the sand out.
Oh, yeah, that's
true. Yeah.
We knew about that.
We knew about that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, because they continued to fill up.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
I was like, I should have worn gaiters.
Yeah.
Over them.
Yeah.
With, like, my bare legs and some shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So as we are walking up to the start of the trail, we are immediately greeted with a sign that tells us to take plenty of water with us, as there are two steep climbs that we would have to do on this hike.
Further signage told us to watch out for and to follow the trail markers, which were blue posts with the club symbol on the top of them, and to not hike during the hottest part of the day from June to August. It was, as we said earlier, April, and it was hot. So also, I would say don't hike during the hottest part of the day most times of the year, maybe in like the low time of the year as far as temperatures, like November to February, maybe it would be refreshing. But yeah, April was definitely already feeling kind of warm.
So this trail initially cuts us through a field of dune grass. Then it is very apparent that the hill we need to cross over will lead us into the dune fields. When we get onto the dune fields, we can see the Sacramento Mountains and the San Andreas Mountains a little bit better, as we were a little more elevated here.
So when we get onto the dune field, there was initially a lot more plant life and these sort of hulking dunes with dry vegetation growing from them. It is a very different glimpse into this park than we have seen so far. There is a lot more vegetation here than I expected, and it's clear that these desert plants have adapted very well to their climate.
Right here on a lot of the signboards is a character that we see that is here on the interpretive signage, because while, yes, when I say like White Sands is like the image in the mind of a like completely white desert, like that's what you get at White Sands. And this is the first time we're really sort of getting this, but there is still interpretive signage. And on this interpretive signage is a character called Katie the Kit Fox,
mm-hmm.
who sort of acts like a mascot for the trail. And some of the signs are a little easier to read than others because the sun has like totally bleached them out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And yes, it is hot when we're on this and it is exposed, but yet not too bad.
No, we are able to see the markers in the distance and we're able to watch a trail of people that's following them. So getting lost would have been a little difficult. You would have had to been very oblivious to your surroundings and just wander off. There is a lot of elevation change here as we move through the dune field, though. But the biggest rise up until this point was the initial grunt that we had taken from the parking lot area where there was all the dune grass up over the hill to get onto the dune field.
Okay, so as we continue to go out, we do come closer to the edges of the dune field. We're actually very high up, and it feels a little odd to see, but it probably would have been a good time, like, if had we sleds and wanted to sled down the hills here.
Because it was very hot. There was, like, we were highly elevated here.
Yeah.
In this back part of the dune field from the lower floor that was below us. It was pretty cool.
And there are almost, like, canyons between the dune fields. And down below, there's some low vegetation in them. I mean, not a ton, but some. And so we were getting a little bit of that in between.
It's probably because those areas got a lot more shade because they're in a lower valley, quotation marks around that, between these dune fields.
And then there were some plants that had some like remnants of seed pods and flowers on them and like some grasses and twigs that had grown woody that were all around in this area. Eventually we get to a section that is chock full of like fallen over, dead, and like ghostly looking standing trees. These looked like, you know, like an album cover from the 90s.
Yeah.
Like from like a Red Hot Chili Peppers album or something like that.
I hated this part. This was my least favorite part of the park.
Because you don't love dead trees or
no,
anything.
No, I don't.
You don't have a collection of photos just of dead trees.
No.
At some point, Mike will publish a book of photography dead trees.
This was really strange, though, and a little wild to see, because a place like this you would think would be completely devoid of life, least of all trees, but yet here they are. And this was an area where a lot of people were, because again, I think they were feeling the same thing we were. Like, we're literally in the middle of a desert, and why are these trees here? This feels very, very odd. But again, as we talked about earlier in the episode with the Playa Trail, the water table is not far below the surface, so clearly, taproots are digging for that water and getting it. After taking the time to explore among these trees, where there was actually some shade, we do end up making our trek up and back to the original signboard that we started at, following the blue markers back up to it. This was the second big grunt of the trail, heading back to that starting crest where we first were introduced to Katie the Kit Fox.
Not the hardest grunt, but it was still a grunt. So when we got to the top, we ended up making our way over the initial hill all the way down through the dune field that we trudged through to get back to the car. And that is where we took off our packs, got ourselves set for some off-pavement driving toward the Alkali Flats Trail. So we're going to put these on the Karen Stone scale of difficulty. What I will say, though, is Katie the Kit Fox on the interpretive signage, what I liked about her is that she was just like a small piece on the interpretive signage that generally told you about the animals of the area and the plants of the area. Mm-hmm. And then Katie the Kit Fox, who is a kit fox, is a type of animal that appears in White Sands National Park. She would tell you and introduce you to some of the other animals in that area.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was something I liked about the interpretive signage. It was a journey.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the first one we did, which was... Or the first Playa one Trail. We talked about, which was the Playa Trail.
Two.
Great, yes.
Yeah.
Two, only because there is a part of this that's like not paved or a boardwalk that you do... Right. to go out on, and we did have to navigate it a little bit.
Yes. Relatively.
So 4 out of 20 Karen Stones. What about the interlude boardwalk?
1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Likely 1.
Is it
flat. Even a thing?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
So 1.
So 2 out of 20 or 1 out of 10.
Yes.
Yeah. On the Karen Stone scale.
That's right.
And then lastly, the Dunes Nature Loop.
I'm going to give this a 5 only because like there's definitely some uphill. And if you're not used to walking in sand, that's new.
Yeah.
And that's fun. And yeah. That's its own challenge. So
yeah.
5.
I'm saying 4. 4 is my journey here.
Great.
It's not as hard as some of the other sand trails that we've done, or even as lengthy or difficult as what Alkali Flats would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 9 out of 20 Karen Stones. And so let's end this episode like we end all of our long format episodes with some Jeopardy style trivia. Okay, Mike, who wants to get us started today?
I can.
Okay.
So my Jeopardy is titled How You Dune. And it's actually a play on Matt LeBlanc and his characters.
It actually?
Yes, it is. So
wait, you said characters in the plural, and I don't know that that's true.
He just plays himself.
He only plays the one. He's only Joe Tribbiani, and that's it. No, I know he has other characters. Mm-hmm.
Well, the roles he's played in other films.
Okay,
we'll go
great.
With that. So that was my inspiration. Dragging great. Matt LeBlanc was not on my bingo card for this episode, but here we are.
Great.
For 100, it's the role that put Matt LeBlanc on the map as the himbo Joey Tribbiani on this long-running NBC sitcom about a group of young pals living in New York.
What is Friends?
Yeah, that's right. Friends it is. A show that I just, it's fine in my lexicon of shows. It's okay. People can come for me in the comments.
That's fine. We don't besmirch your love for Friends. I did watch
or
it
lack
when it
of
was
love.
On. It's not a show I've gone back to.
Yeah. Too much. There's too much. Okay. For 200, like all of his buddies on Friends, Matt made his foray into film as well. His first major role was a remake of this 1960s sci-fi television series.
What is Charlie's Angels?
No.
Oh, what is... Okay, pause. What is Lost in Space?
That's correct.
Now, Charlie's Angels, not sci-fi, but okay.
Now, can you name some of the other... This is a bonus side quest.
Oh, I absolutely can.
Can you name some of the other first films of the other cast members of Friends?
Oh, some of the first films
yes.
of the other cast members mm-hmm. of Friends? Okay, great. Okay, Jennifer Aniston was Leprechaun.
I'm looking for like box office successful films.
Oh, I'm sorry. You said first.
Sorry. All right. Well, Leprechaun is fine.
Leprechaun.
I'll also take Office Space.
I was going to say Office Space. Picture Perfect.
Okay. I
Rumor
just want one.
It.
Thank you.
That
just
was
one.
Jennifer Aniston.
Great. One.
Okay. Lisa Kudrow would have been Romy and Michelle.
That's right.
Also, the one about the boxer, the woman boxer, or the manager of the boxer. also starring Jane Krakowski.
I don't know that film. Courtney Cox.
Hold on. What? No, we have to find the name of it. It was called Marcy X.
Oh.
And Lisa Kudrow is forced to take control of a hardcore hip-hop record label. That's what it was. There was another movie that, yeah, I think it was some other blonde woman managed a boxer. Anyway, I was confusing them.
Yeah.
But Marcy X is a movie that also starred Lisa Kudrow. But okay, okay. But we'll go back to the other Friends characters.
Mm-hmm.
Courtney Cox. Scream.
That's right. Yep.
Okay.
And Matthew Perry.
Matthew Perry, Fools Rush In.
Yes, look at you go. You got
but
it.
I didn't get David Schwimmer.
Oh, I forgot about Schwimmer. Oh, I didn't write him down.
David Schwimmer. I don't know.
And that's...
Sorry, David
Schwimmer. Besmirching both Matt LeBlanc and David Schwimmer.
Mm-hmm. Whoops. Sorry to this man.
Yep, sorry to that. Sorry to this white man. Anyway, whoops. For 300, on the remake kick, LeBlanc played a supporting role as Lucy Liu's himbo-akin actor boyfriend in a movie based on a 70s television series about ethereal crime fighters.
And there it is. And that is what is Charlie's Angels. Right.
Great. For 400, this spinoff of Friends, aptly titled Joey, only lasted for 2 seasons, but featured this actress known for her comedic chops in many a Christopher Guest film. She is most recently known as a wealthy socialite who met her untimely death when she thought that these gays were trying to murder her.
Who is Jennifer Coolidge?
That's right. And for 500... this role, which earned him a Golden Globe, had Matt LeBlanc playing a fictionalized version of himself. This was a television series.
Oh, right. Oh, what is Extras?
Not Extras.
Oh, it was something like that, though.
What's
right?
Episodes?
What is Episodes? Mm-hmm. That's it. Okay, yep, great.
Great. And that's how you doon.
I like that.
Great.
I like that. Okay, so I went in a completely different direction.
Great.
And I nerded out real hard about gypsum sand chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Gypsum sand chemistry.
There it is. So
come on.
That was good.
You didn't even let me have it. You just barreled on. It was good. It was good.
That deserved its own moment, and I'm glad you took it and you got it, because that was very good. Oh, God. Yeah. Okay. Are we ready?
I think so.
Okay. So I don't think these are too hard, but okay. Also I love chemistry.
Okay.
Okay. So some of them might be a little hard.
Great.
Okay, great. So for 100, gypsum is a crystal made up of the chemical composition CaSO4-2H2O, which stands for this.
So Ca is calcium.
Mm-hmm.
CO is carbon.
So CaSO4.
A sodium? No.
Not sodium. And then 2H2O. I know this is a hard one. I'm not going to lie.
Is it, what's in the atmosphere?
Oxygen?
No. That, the ozone. Is it ozone? It's, mm-mm. No, so water.
So H2O is.
Water.
But there's two of them.
H2O. Double water.
It is double water. That is correct. In this chemical composition, so Ca is calcium.
Yeah.
SO4, collectively, the S standing for one thing and the O standing for something else. I'm going to tell you
selenium?
These things later.
Oh.
Create sulfate. SO4 okay. is sulfate.
Okay.
But calcium sulfate dihydrate is okay. what it is technically considered.
Great.
So... two get water ready to molecules get slaughtered. Is dihydrate.
Your share joke is the only happy moment from this part.
Okay, for 200. Gypsum and its unique composition known as calcium sulfate dihydrate. On the periodic table, calcium is represented by Ca, which also represents this golden state.
What's California?
Correct. For 300. I threw you a bone with that one.
Thanks.
For 300, dihydrate is the second part of the formula of gypsum, and it means two water molecules. If it were one water molecule, it would be called monohydrate. But if it were three water molecules, it would be this. And it also sounds like something you might say to someone holding a bottle of water while standing in the hot sun and standing there being thirsty.
What is trihydrate?
Thank you. Exactly. Trihydrate. Mm-hmm. Okay, for 400. Sulfate, the second part of gypsum, is a polyatomic ion that is represented as SO4 with a negative 2 charge. Sulfate is made up of one sulfur and four of these, also named for a television network that also plays Golden Girls episodes.
What is oxygen?
That is correct. Mm-hmm. And for 500, gypsum is a good way to add calcium and sulfur to soil for richness because it doesn't change the pH of soils. And pH stands for this.
What's please, honey?
That will be considered correct only if presented southernly.
What's please, honey?
Thank you.
Or honey, please. I mean, my HP loyal levels. I can't talk.
So the correct answer is what is potential for hydrogen?
Oh, I did not know.
That
I
is just, what pH means.
Look at
potential
that.
Potential for hydrogen.
Well, I learned something today.
And there you go. From this category, which is called...
Gypsum sand chemistry.
Looking for more episodes like the one you just heard? Then be sure to check out our episode finder for episodes by park, state, hiking difficulty, and terrain, as well as all of our Trail Mix episodes in one helpful place. Click the link in the show notes of this episode, our Instagram bio, or visit our website to make your listening experience even easier.
This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created, produced, edited, and hosted by us,
Justin Dallard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram and on our website is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariella Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we are on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as New Jersey.